Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com and become part of the Twitter team. And if you see Mark over there, tell him I said hello. And also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where we've got some really good links on our Get Involved page. There's also some wonderful charities for folks to check out on the Give page. And you can also, by texting 80100 as the number, and in the message part of it, just type in Lion, and for only $10, and some data charges may apply, you can send a stuffed lion to a child who was recently diagnosed with cancer. So if folks get on and check that out, I'd appreciate it. But thank you, everyone, for coming in tonight. The title of tonight's show is about the secret meetings with health insurance lobbyists to talk about Obamacare. And we'll also have a discussion on socialized medicine. As always, callers and chat participation are welcome. So come and talk with the host, our guests, and other audience members. And as always, of course, as long as you're respectful, all mics stay open. And that number you can call into is area code 347-945-7428. And Bard's Logic, as I said, we'll be discussing the secret meetings on the Obamacare with health insurance lobbyists. And a quote here we have from Newt Gingrich, and it is, why isn't today's White House secret meeting with insurance executives and lobbyists public? Of course, we know when Bush had secret meetings and Cheney with some oil executives, how much flack they got for that. And also joining us tonight will be conservative activist Cindy Todd, as well as the founder of Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment, James Neighbors. And so we look forward to hearing from them tonight. And also later on, I will be playing an audio clip by someone that many of the listeners here, I'm sure, are familiar with. And I can't wait to play that tonight. And also got a couple articles to discuss as well, and that's how we will start. But first, I will be bringing in, I believe, Mr. Neighbors. Thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. It's great to have everyone on. And thanks for everybody tonight. So as I said, I'll start off with a short article I have here from The Hill that someone sent me on the Facebook page of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And I do glean from there and put some information out on the show. So if anyone wants to like the page of Bard's Logic Political Talk, just check it out at Facebook. And there's also the Bard's Logic Political Talk group where you can ask what you would like to see and hear on the show. Just like last week, we had members of Shepo Team on, and that was requested by one of our listeners to have them on. And we were fortunate enough to have them come because I tell you what, there were two great, wonderful young gentlemen there that we had on last week. Wouldn't you say, James?
Oh, that was really good last week. I wish I could have stayed on longer.
Yeah, me too. We all wish you've been able to stay on, and we understand that you, of course, have other obligations you need to attend to. And I have put an invite to them to come back on the show as well, and so we'll see how that goes. But, you know, we know they work a couple of different jobs as well as doing their political commentator cartoon, at least that's how I call it, on Shepherd Team, where, of course, people could check that out on Facebook as well. But I will go to the article, and then we'll move on. And this is from The Hill, and it's titled, "The White House to Meet with Health Insurers." Have to put my eyes on here. It says, health insurance executives are headed to the White House on Wednesday, which was today, happened today, discuss the botched rollout of Obamacare's enrollment system. White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonnell and Senior Advisor Valerie Jarrett will meet with health plan CEOs on the same day that House Democrats will huddle with a key health and human services official on Capitol Hill. The chief lobbyist for health insurers, Karen Ignani, will attend the White House meeting. But Ignani's group, America's Health Insurance Plans, declined to provide further details about the insurance executives who headed to the White House. The meeting comes as the Obama administration struggles to fix problems plaguing the online enrollment portal where millions are meant to sign up for health care coverage. And, of course, we know about the debacle there. Kind of adds that in. It says the stakes are high for insurance companies. We're talking about health insurance companies. It says the health care law charges them new taxes on the assumptions that insurance will gain millions of new customers in the next several years. One thing I would like, I'm going off the article, but one thing I like to know, and if anyone would like to call in with that information at 347-945-7428, let us know if they're going to be taxed prior to getting these millions, under that assumption that they'll be getting millions of new customers. That'd be an interesting bit of information to know. But on to the article. It ends with, HHS has not released enrollment figures so far, but health insurers have reported that only a small number of people have successfully purchased policies on the marketplaces. The companies have also received muddled and confusing applications for coverage as a result of the enrollment system's problems. House Democrats will meet with Mike Cash, who leads the Department's Office of Health Reform. And so we'll bring the mic to you, James. And what do you think about that with lobbyists and CEOs meeting with the Obama in secret meetings? We know that, as I mentioned earlier, Bush got a lot of slack when he was meeting with oil officials on with secret meetings. So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out.
Well, I mean, it's just another example, the fact that the meetings were, you know, well, secret, but yet they were known about. You know, the contents, of course, were not entirely open. And the fact is, you know, just like you said, when Bush had any meetings of the sort, he was just lambasted. When any other president has done anything of the sort, they get slammed. But just like everything that, you know, that has happened since Obama's been president, it just gets swept under the rug by the left and just gets ignored. It gets ignored. I mean, the fact is he's got so many scandals and so many secret meetings and so many documents that remain sealed, but yet nothing is done about it. And, you know, what we've seen here in the last 5 years is a pattern of intentional deception, distraction, and covering up by not only the administration, but everybody involved with them. Everybody involved with them. I mean, he's got a large number of collaborators in whatever his end game is. And, you know, when it comes to something as important as health care, you would have hoped that he would have been as transparent as what he claimed he would be. And the very obvious case is that he's been the least transparent person and president in history. I mean, the fact that his own personal documents are sealed up should have been a very strong harbinger of what was to come. And you know, he's got a complete pattern of that: cover up, hide it, keep it secret. We don't want everybody to know what's really going on. And, you know, the more we learn about Obamacare, the more we can understand why they kept it secret. It's disastrous for the entire nation.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, and I will have an article later that I'm going to read. It may be a little lengthy, but I think it's worth going through it. And it's from the Politico about lawmakers and aides of the lawmakers may get Obamacare exemptions. And I definitely want to add that into the discussion tonight. But I do have our other panelists here on the line. That would be Cindy Todd. So I want to open up her mic and say welcome, Cindy. Thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you? Oh, looks like we just lost her. I just opened it up, and then it looks like they might have been disconnected. So we'll wait for you to call back in, Cindy. So go ahead, James.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, the fact that Obamacare is written like it is, and the fact that the IRS is administering it, and the fact that they can come in and, you know, seize your house and seize your car and your personal property for noncompliance if you refuse to pay the fines, that ought to say a lot to everybody. You know, never before in the history of America, you know, in the history of America, has that threat existed, where the, you know, where if you simply don't get health insurance, you could lose everything you own. And if that doesn't say everything that everybody needs to know about our about our current president, I mean, I'm not sure what will. I mean, he will confiscate your house and your property for not having health insurance, and for refusing to pay the fines for not having health insurance. I mean, really? What kind of country is this? I mean, even they don't even do that in Russia.
And there definitely are dangers that we will hear about a 10-minute clip later from Ronald Reagan, who warned us about socialized medicine and what the implications down the road, if that's installed, it means for a country. And we will be bringing that on tonight, giving us a warning. But we do see that, I do see that Cindy is back on the line. Let me try this again. Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I picked up the phone. I had it laying beside me just listening. I picked up the phone and pushed the end button. So, sorry.
No, not a problem. Understood.
Do you think I got scared and won't say anything?
Now he can repeat it, but I do want to welcome the folks from the chat here at the show. Those of you who have come in as guests, welcome, but also those who have signed in. So welcome Harriet and Jessica and Michelle, and then all the other guests that are in the chat, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Cindy. And, yeah, James, if you want to reiterate the part you may have missed, go ahead, James. Where did you leave off, Cindy? And then I'll give him a place to start.
Oh, I was just saying. Did you think that I got scared and didn't want to talk, so I hung up?
No, not you.
You're right, not me. I just can't believe that the American people are allowing this to go on. I don't know how much longer. Well, I guess it's because the news media just so thoroughly covers it up. Everybody I talk to that's not involved on one of my Facebook pages or, you know, on the blog talk shows or something like that, anybody that I talk to just in my regular life, they don't have a clue. I'd say, did you know that this? No. You know, they don't, because all they listen to is the drive-by media, and they have no idea what's really going on behind the scenes, including my own family. They're very hardcore Republicans, but they don't really know a lot about what's going on.
Well, I think there's two things. I think there's, you know, and I'm not trying to overgeneralize, but I think there's two. One is that folks are just, you know, working so much that they unfortunately don't have the opportunity to be able to pay attention to what's all going on, and you know, I've said this many times on the show, that I think that's by design by the government, so that we don't know really what's going on, or at least, you know, the masses, so to speak, don't know. Or it's to the point where people are so frustrated because they feel like they cannot make a difference. And I disagree with this, but that, you know, that they just say, well, just live out my life and watch my own reality shows, and you know, I just don't care because there's really nothing I can do about it. And those are the folks as well that we need to bring on board and, you know, and bring it to our fold and take the action, because we really need to get out to them that they can make a difference on each individual. I mean, look what, you know, some of the folks we've had on the show as individuals have done to really make an impact.
Well, let me just remind them that if everybody was like they are, we would not have had the American Revolution, and we would not be a free nation right now. We would still be a arm of England, and we'd still be a king or a queen. We'd still be doing whatever the heck he wanted us to.
It's kind of like that now, where the, you know, where we are kind of like, you have the president now who's kind of like a king, and then you know, the politicians and the, you know, corporatists out there, they're more like the new aristocracy, and that leaves the American people as to serve. So what do you think, James?
Well, and that's exactly what we've got going on, is we're literally on the verge of a new American royalty, or the first time American royalty. If you look at the way the ones that blindly follow Obama, they revere him almost. I mean, you know, Jamie Foxx said that, you know, he was our Lord and Savior.
Oh,
and we have had some excellent presidents in the past. George Washington was revered. They wanted to make him king, and he refused. But yet here we are with a president now that's got, you know, tens of millions of supporters. And I would have to add, it's not the majority of American people, because the majority of American people aren't even voters. And you know, here we have a president that's literally revered almost to the point of a god, and they will not even question what he does, because what he says is good to them, and it doesn't matter if the net result is bad. Whatever he says goes, period. And that's just a sad state of affairs for America. Never before in our history have we ever looked, any portion of our society looked so blindly upon a president where, regardless of what he did they follow so blindly? And you know, I look around and I wonder, do they have, you know, some sort of, you know, subliminal messaging in television? Do they put something in the water? I mean, what is it? That brings about this blind obedience to this president, that his actions, regardless of his place of birth, because that hasn't been determined for certain yet, regardless of that, his actions are patently and blatantly un- and anti-American. And it's just really, I never in my life would have imagined seeing a point in time in American society where I could look at people and call them a sheep. But here we are.
Yeah, they are. And you know, it's all because we've dumbed down the children so badly in school that they can't even think for themselves. And they have purposely brought us to this point. This is not something that they have brought on us overnight, and they brought Obama in as a tester, I think, as a tester to see if we are ready to accept this, and I think what they're finding out is that we are.
Yeah,
and,
I hate to say that.
It's a long plan, and they had a condition. They had to get it out of us. They knew that they couldn't beat love of freedom out of us. They had to make us. They had to make us want to leave freedom. In other words, they had to make us decide that being dependent on government was the better way to go. And they've done that through propaganda. They've done it through lying. They've done it through laws. They've done it through the schools, taking the flag out and the Ten Commandments out and prayer out and Bible out. You know, that all of our history is gone. We've had revisionist history for the past, I don't know, 50, 60 years now. And nobody knows what our nation is supposed to be about. So what do they think they're losing? They don't even know what they're losing. They don't know why we came to this point. They don't know why we're as rich as we are. They don't know why we're as blessed as we are. They don't know those things because they weren't taught in school. And to tell you the truth, even in my generation, I was going to school back in the 60s and 70s. And in my generation, we weren't even taught about George Washington's Christianity or the revolutionary spirit that caused America to go from a gentry aristocracy society with slaves and it was like almost like a European country, very much very similar to a European monarchy here. We were a little bit different because of the distance between us and the king. We got away with a lot of stuff and had a lot of freedoms that other people didn't have in Europe. But most people don't know that anymore. They don't know what our beginnings were, and so they don't know why those things are preferable. They don't know why they were actually a catalyst to bring about a mighty nation that is just about to topple because we've left those feelings, we've left those philosophies, those ideals. We've lost the burning light within us. Now, you know, Reagan kind of stoked that fire again, kind of stirred the embers and got us going again. Mm-hmm. We've had a few that, you know, kind of got us going again. And I think that Newt Gingrich would have gotten us going again if he was our president right now. But by and large, they have silenced anybody who tried to get us going. You've seen people assassinated that tried to burn, to get that fire going, you know. You look at Kennedy and his brother Bobby and Reagan being shot. Those were not accidents, and those weren't random people who just happened to hate government or be anarchists. Those mm-hmm. were constructed assassinations with a purpose, and that purpose was to keep that fire out. And we have not regained that fire. It looks like there's a little understirrings that we, the people, might be stirring up that fire through, you know, blog talk shows like this and Facebook pages and websites and, you know.
Overpasses for Obama's impeachment.
Overpasses for Obama's impeachment. There, you see it, but because we can't get press, or at least when we do get press, it's negative.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get that fire started. It's hard to get it spread out through the nation. But I tell you what, James, I think that yours is one of the best ideas anybody's come up with because it puts us right in front of the people. We're standing there on that interstate watching thousands of cars go by that we would not otherwise be able to have the venue to speak to them. They're not seeing anything on TV about these overpasses people. So they're like, what the heck is that? You know?
So,
and then
I will chime in on something real quick, Cindy. And then Michelle in the chat made a comment here I'll put out, and thank you very much for the message, Michelle. It says, you would think, since it is supposed to be law of the land, that the Constitution would be taught more in school. I learned very little about it back in the 80s. And then the comment I like to make is, I mean, I did see on August 6th when you did the national, James, when they did the national, you know, going around for the Obama's impeachment, overpasses for Obama's impeachment, it actually did make it on all my local news here where I live. So, I mean, they covered it. I mean, it was a Fox channel, you know, it wasn't like the national news, but it was the local Fox channel. Where they did cover the overpasses for Obama's impeachment here. So, I mean, I can't speak for anywhere else, but I know my local station got it.
Well, that's always refreshing to see. I mean, it's I expect when, you know, the only way we'll ever actually get on the national end of things is they'll be, you know, trying to come up with some manufactured slam piece, and that's fine. You know, because the funny thing is, when they try to do things like that, well, people see past things. You know, they do see past things, especially when they see us out there. And, you know, the fact is that the, you know, what she touched on earlier is that, you know, the people don't feel like they have any say anymore in anything that goes on. And the fact of the matter is that's just because they've been conditioned that they're just one person. And, you know, just their, you know, that they don't matter, that they're only one out of 310 million people. And, you know, that's not the case. That quite simply isn't the case. And anybody that, anybody that's been out there on an overpass or at a Monsanto protest or, or at a Second Amendment rally, they all know that people do see them and that they are waking up. That's why they return, and that's why people, when they get out there and they spread the word, they understand that they are making a difference. And it's a wonderful thing. And we just have to continue to embolden people to speak out against things like Obamacare. I mean, my gosh, and speak out for things like the defense of the Second Amendment. And the fact of the matter is that really the only reversal that I can see will be, as far as especially with our children, would be either to have a complete revamping of the United States Department of Education, or just to get rid of it completely and let each state teach their own curriculum based on a standard of some sort. So everybody receives a decent education. But we've got to bring back, legitimate history and teaching, where it brings back critical thinking, because that's the whole key about the First Amendment, even, is the ability to, the entire Constitution. It's really the whole thing about the entire Constitution is the ability for the people that live with the Constitution and with the rights, contained therein, is to be able to critically think and understand them, and not to be taught into this groupthink that has gone on, this collectivist thinking. It doesn't take a village to raise a child. I raised my own daughter with the help of my parents, but mostly on my own. And I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I'm not a village. I don't know any one person, any single parent out there that takes care of their kid. It's a village. So this nonsense about feeding people the lie that they cannot do it by themselves is that's exactly what it is it's a lie, because people have done things on their own since the beginning of time, since man first walked on the planet. They have done things on their own. Individuals have done things on their own. The Iceman they found in the glacier was off doing things on his own. History is just filled with individuals that stood above and beyond the rest that did things on their own. And that's what we need to reinstill into the American psyche, is that you can do it. It doesn't take a we. And, you know, I'm not the guy with all the answers on that, but we've got to find a way to reinstill that individual spirit, that individual thinking.
Rugged individualism.
Well, exactly,
yeah.
Not collectivism. Collectivism is, I mean, we've seen what it's doing to this nation, and it's destroying it.
We see what it's already done to everything.
Real quick, Sandeju, we do have a caller here who would like to chime in, and for those who are new listening to the show, you can chime in as well. Just call in at 347-945-7428. And 515, area code 515, I'm opening up your mic. Just tell us where you're from, your name. How are you?
David Haynes from Ames, Iowa.
Oh, thank you very much, David. How are you?
And I'm doing great. I just wanted to call in. I was on Facebook and just caught a note of this blog radio show tonight. And I just like to encourage the people, you know, the truckers went to D.C. and the bikers are gone there and the vets. And I listened to Ernest Lee. He posted a video and told people to check into a convention of the states. I believe that's what it's called. And we're this overpasses for impeach Obama. I'm a member. My brother Robert is in Wisconsin, and he's a state leader up there, and does quite a few rallies and all that. And I just encourage people, you know. Yes, you can make a difference, you know, because I see people post stuff about, you know, Obama, it's time to impeach him. They go, well, my voice can't be heard. Yes, it can be heard. We, the people, we need to be united. United we stand, and we can get this done. And so I just encourage people to check us out. You know, I'm not a state leader or anything, but I haven't missed a rally yet down in Des Moines, Iowa. And kind of ran into a few bumps in the road at West Des Moines over past Jordan Creek. The cops were trying to tell us we couldn't bring signs and all that or we'd be arrested. But we go down to Des Moines on the 44th Street overpass, and we hang our signs, wave our flags, and we get a lot of support. So, you know, everybody please check us out. We're a peaceful organization. We just want to send the message because it's time to clean house.
Mm-hmm. So certainly, yeah. And speaking of cleaning house, is one thing we will be discussing on subsequent shows is about cleaning up the House of Representatives. And when you have, you know, true conservatives who are going to be running in primaries against these rhinos coming 2014, that's definitely something we need to pay attention and be a part of as well, you know, to get those guys out. Because if we don't, we're going to continually seeing the Republicans, you know, in the long run, you know, continually caving you know, to the liberals and to Obama. So I think that's something very important
that
we're going to be looking to get involved in.
I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank James Neighbors for starting this Overpasses to Impeach Obama, because it's a great organization.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad the inspiration came to me. That's, you know,
well, my brother got me involved in it, Robert Haynes in Wisconsin. I'm his little brother down here in Iowa, so...
Yeah, I know, and yeah, it's great. I mean, we've got, Robert, you know, awesome guy. Awesome guy.
It runs in the family.
it's good to see.
You guys keep up with the great show and the great work, and united we stand.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, David, and I tell you what, as we do here on the show, is you're new here to the show, we do, and it's up to you, of course, but we do leave the mics open, and we kind of do a round table here where we go through the discussion, and then, you know, we'll kind of move around, and we'll go to, like, from Cindy to James and then back to you if you want to stay on and continue with the conversation, or you can just listen, whichever you want to do. I just want to let you know, and for others who call in, that you're welcome to stay on and stay in the conversation as well if you so choose, so.
I'll hang with you guys.
Okay, great. Awesome. Well, I think this will be a good time here. It's a little bit at the bottom of the hour, and I did tell folks that we were going to do this. And thank you, Harriet, and welcome to the show. Yes, I think definitely been growing, and the popularity of the show has been growing also on Blog Talk Radio. But that's because of topics. It's about the grassroots. Bard's Logic is about we the people, conservatism, and as more people start paying attention and listening to the show, it's the audience. So I really appreciate you saying that, this kind words, Harriet. I really appreciate it. I'm not the one talking mostly on here, and I like it that way. I like to be able to, as I just told David, keep the mics open so the people can come in and talk and be heard as well. So, but I really appreciate that, Harriet. But I do want to take this time, as I said I would. I know it's a longer clip. It's about 10 minutes, and everyone, of course, on the line is welcome to stay on. And then those who want to chime in with what they hear, 347-945-7428. I'm going to play this clip. It's about 10 minutes, but it's Ronald Reagan. So I don't think anyone would mind listening to Ronald Reagan for 10 minutes. And this is his warning and speaking out against socialized medicine.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, 6 times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us and at the moment is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Farrand introduced the Farrand Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents of someone eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Farrand brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Farrand was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that. Walter Reuther said, it's no secret that the United Automobile Workers is officially on record as backing a program of national health insurance. And by national health insurance, he meant socialized medicine for every American. Well, let's see what the socialists themselves had to say about it. They say, once the Farrand Bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction until it includes the entire population. Well, we can't say we haven't been warned. Now, Congressman Farrand is no longer a congressman of the United States government. He has been replaced, not in his particular assignment, but in his backing of such a bill, by Congressman King of California. It is presented in the idea of a great emergency that millions of our senior citizens are unable to provide needed medical care. But this ignores the fact that in the last decade, 127 million of our citizens, in just 10 years, have come under the protection of some form of privately owned medical or hospital insurance. Now, the advocates of this bill, when you try to oppose it, challenge you on an emotional basis. They say, what would you do? Throw these poor old people out to die with no medical attention? That's ridiculous, and of course, no one has advocated it. As a matter of fact, in the last session of Congress, a bill was adopted known as the Kerr-Mills Bill. Now, without even allowing this bill to be tried to see if it works, they have introduced this King bill, which is really the Foran bill. What is the Kerr Mills bill? It is a frank recognition of the medical need or problem of a senior citizen that I've mentioned. And it is provided from the federal government money to the states and the local communities that can be used at the discretion of the state to help those people who need it. Now, what reason could the other people have for backing a bill which says we insist on compulsory health insurance for senior citizens on a basis of age alone, regardless of whether they are worth millions of dollars, whether they have an income, whether they're protected by their own insurance, whether they have savings? I think we could be excused for believing that, as ex-Congressman Foran said, this was simply an excuse to bring about what they wanted all the time, socialized medicine. James Madison in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, "Since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." They want to attach this bill to Social Security, and they say here is a great insurance program now instituted, now working. Let's take a look at Social Security itself. Again, very few of us disagree with the original premise that there should be some form of saving that would keep destitution from following unemployment by reason of death, disability, or old age. And to this end, Social Security was adopted. But it was never intended to supplant private savings, private insurance, pension programs of unions and industries. Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest heights that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country is something to be envied anyplace. The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other. But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. A doctor would be reluctant to say this. Well, like you, I'm only a patient, so I can say it in his behalf. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients. They're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town. They already have enough doctors. You have to go someplace else. And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. I know how I'd feel if you, my fellow citizens, decided that to be an actor, I had to become a government employee and work in a national theater. Take it into your own occupation or that of your husband. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods, determine his employment. From here, it's a short step to all the rest of socialism, to determining his pay. And pretty soon, your son won't decide when he's in school where he will go or what he will do for a living. He will wait for the government to tell him where he will go to work and what he will do. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in world's history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, a little group of men, the founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom was built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today, and strangely, we let democracy begin to assume the aspect of majority rule is all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this? Well, you and I can do a great deal. We can write to our congressmen, to our senators. We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on these individual liberties and freedoms. And at the moment, the key issue is we do not want socialized medicine. In Washington today, 40,000 letters, less than 100 per congressman, are evidence of a trend in public thinking. Representative Halleck of Indiana has said, when the American people want something from Congress, regardless of its political complexion, if they make their wants known, Congress does what the people want. So write. And if this man writes back to you and tells you that he too is for free enterprise, but we have these great services and so forth that must be performed by government, don't let him get away with it. Show that you have not been convinced. Write a letter right back and tell him that you believe in government economy and fiscal responsibility, that you know that governments don't tax to get the money they need. Governments will always find a need for the money they get, and that you demand the continuation of our traditional free enterprise system. You and I can do this. The only way we can do it is by writing to our congressman, even if we believe that he's on our side to begin with. Write to strengthen his hand. Give him the ability to stand before his colleagues in Congress and say, I have heard from my constituents and this is what they want. Write those letters now. Call your friends and tell them to write them. If you don't, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until one day, as Norman Thomas said, we will awake to find that we have socialism. And if you don't do this, and if I don't do it, one of these days you and I are going to spend our sunset years.
And he ends up saying, we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was like when American men were free. And with that, I'm going to open up the mic, 414. You are next in line. And then after 414 comes on, we will move on to get some discussion. We'll start with you, David, and then we'll move to James and then Cindy, and we'll go around that way to get the comments on the audio that we just heard. So 414, if you could just tell us where you're hailing from, and your name, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Well, my name is Robert Haynes, and I'm the state leader for Overpasses for America in Wisconsin. And my fellow patriot brother, James Neighbors, is on the line, and my real brother, little brother, Dave.
Hi, big brother.
Awesome.
Robert.
I want to give a shout-out. But
it's a family show now.
I just want to make a comment. President Reagan hit it right on the nail, and he's been preaching about this ever since the 60s. And this infringement on our freedom and our rights and our decision to make medical decisions is a travesty on America and we the people. Bottom line, this is socialized medicine. And we the people need to rise up, fight, and stop this tyranny on we the people in America. Our constitutional republic is under daily attack. Our freedom, our liberty. Everything with Obama and his minions need to be confronted and stopped. We must take back our country any way we can.
Well, thank you very much, Robert, for coming on. As you've been listening, you may have heard that we do keep the mics open, so you are very welcome to stay with us. And so, David, what do you think about what we just heard there from Ronald Reagan? And how much of that you think we're even seeing today?
I agree with Ronald Reagan's speech, and I also like to go back to what Robert was just talked about. Like I said, he's my big brother, and we're blood brothers, same last name, same mother and dad. And this country, it's falling to pieces thanks to Obama and this Obamacare. It's pretty bad that this administration wants to force the American people on it, but it's not good enough for them. They're exempt from
mm-hmm.
it. And, if it's not good for the goose, it's not good for the gander, the old saying says, So,
mm-hmm.
It's got me irritated, and, that's why, I'm getting more involved doing these call-in shows and, you know, spreading the word out, because, you know, nothing gets done sitting at home talking about it on the computer. Nothing gets done, you know, talking to your neighbor about it and leaving it at that. You got to get involved. We got to be heard. And, you know, with shows like this and the overpasses and just anything and everything, you know, writing your senators, you know, be heard, because your voice does count. We the people will take America back.
Exactly, and that's, you know, one of the tenets here of, you know, Bard's logic is to be heard, you know, Tom Fix later, or earlier. You know, it's about the grassroots, about we the people, and that's what's important for people to get together. So, what do you think, James, about what these gentlemen have said and also the clip we just heard?
Well, I mean, you know, they're absolutely spot on. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons that overpasses has done so well is because it's brought together just a huge group of people that can see what's happening to our country. If Ronald Reagan had been born 1,000 years ago, they'd have called him a seer or a psychic and would have said he had visions of the future, because what he said, every word that he said in that speech is coming true, and it has been coming true. That was it, Norman Thomas was his name, that in 1927, you know, when he said that socialism would succeed in America under the guise of liberalism. And you look at what people that call themselves liberals these days, and they really are all about control in every facet that they can possibly put a wedge in and take control on. A liberal, a true liberal, would be like our fathers, because they were about liberty, and that's what the root of that word is, I believe, is liberty. And when this so-called liberalism that has been rebranded today, which is actually socialism, you know, as it has slowly taken control, and it has been a slow creep, they realized they couldn't just put it upon the American people all at once, that they had to pull at people's heartstrings slowly but surely and incrementally apply their principles and their beliefs and their system onto the American people. And it gets worse every single day. You know, gun registries is obviously the first step toward confiscation.
Mm-hmm.
Socialized medicine is the first step towards, the only phrase I can come up with in recent history would be ethnic cleansing. If a person dissents with what the government says, you could only imagine the level or lack thereof of health care that they would get. The fact that I have been in debates, if you want to call it, you know, well, basically a screaming match from one person and facts from another, a debate, where they end up saying that anybody that doesn't agree with Obamacare doesn't deserve any health care at all, tells you the mindset of the type of people that we have. And the fact is, they want nothing less than the extermination of anyone that disagrees with them. And if that's just the common person out there that believes in this socialist agenda that Valerie Jarrett and Obama and Hillary Clinton, we don't want to forget, you know, the Clinton care attempt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, anybody that would believe in that down on the citizenry level, you have to understand that is a major part of what is driving it on the national political level, because they do want their enemies silenced, so they do have control, so they have absolute power, and we have to stop it by whatever means necessary.
And Cindy?
Hello?
Still have you there, Cindy?
I'm here. I was just muted.
Oh, I'm muted.
Yeah, I'm
going
around.
Oh, that's fine. I appreciate that. Sometimes that keeps the background noise. Go ahead.
No problemo. I'm going around to some people have put some stuff in the chat, some links in the chat, so I'm kind of going around checking on the links too. But, you know, they don't call him the great communicator for nothing. He said exactly what needed to be said. And the only one I think might even
real
be able
quick,
to say
Cindy,
it a little
I'm
bit
sorry.
Better.
I'm sorry, Cindy. There's some background noise going on. So I'll call folks out when they're going to chime in. So if you get some background noise going on, I'd really appreciate if you just – I won't mute your mic unless it continues. But if you could just mute your mic until you come on, I'd appreciate it, because then we won't have the background noise when someone's talking. And I appreciate that. Thank you. Go ahead, Cindy. Sorry about that. I just wanted to do that. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, there was some good stuff in the chat, and I was just kind of looking around. But Reagan is the great communicator, and I guess the one person I think that might even do a little bit better job than him is or at least as good a job as Newt Gingrich. But I'm afraid we're not going to be able to count on him. I just don't see him running again. There's two movements out there trying to get him to run. But he's said that he will not run unless his debt is cleared off, which, you know,
really?
He has still quite
well,
a bit of debt.
We've got to try to do something with that, don't we, Cindy?
Well, there, you know, you remember David Cholesterol. He's been running.
Yes,
I
do.
He's been running a fundraiser, and there's been some others. There's one, there's a group out of Virginia that's trying to get him to, they're running a draft Newt for Senate.
Right.
They need to take that Virginia Senate seat. But anyway, back to Reagan. He pegged it, and as David, or I can't remember, it was David Robert that said that, but anyway, he pegged it. And the thing is, as we were talking about before, getting the people stirred up is the only way we're going to get anything done, because right now they're just sleeping. Don't wake up that sleeping giant, then the little Lilliputtons can just throw all the ropes around the giant that they want to, and the giant's never going to get up. After they're finished roping that giant down, and it just isn't going to happen unless we can get him up before they've done all the damage, which, you know, it may be too late already. I don't know. But they're trying to counter this waking up in different ways. I think they're trying to get us to do something drastic, violent, so that they can crush the movement, institute martial law, and completely crack down and take over. That's all it would take, is for, you know, some group of people to rise up with arms, and then it would be all over at this point. There's only one way that arms could work, and that's if everyone in the country was behind it. There's always going to be some Tories, always going to be some loyalists, but and unless the whole entire conservative population rises up together, arms would never work. And I just don't know that could ever happen. But, you know, that Navy SEAL guy, did y'all see the thing that I shared? I forget who shared it with me, but there's a Navy SEAL. There's a video of him on a news interview, and he's saying that the government is creating conditions that will cause them to have to impose martial law.
Hmm.
And, it was so wonderful to see all those vets walking through Washington, marching through Washington, and nothing happened. You know, they were peaceful and they were quiet. And I saw one comment one place that said the truckers, the bikers, the vets
mm-hmm.
were a more peaceful demonstration than the civil rights demonstrations back in the 50s or whatever, 60s. So, you know, that we can't do it any more peacefully, you know? And yet, I don't know. I don't know if it's enough. What do you think, James?
Well, we won't know until, I suppose, the first shot is fired from the other side. And, you know, I really worry about that day. I worry mm-hmm. that, you know, that may come to being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the fact is, and you referenced the civil rights movement in the 60s, and, of course, we've all seen footage of the Vietnam anti-war protests. You know, the fact is that, you know, I'm going to go with 1970. From, you know, 1970 to 2013, we're looking at 43 years, two generations of Americans that went without seeing anything of the sort that we're doing out on the overpasses. You know, the fact is that for the last 40 years, this country has been without any real unrest. There hasn't been something, for whatever reason or another, to get people up in arms enough to actually get up and stand out. And we've reached that time again. And you know, I wasn't alive or at least I was a baby during the Vietnam War protests, but I can only imagine the level of discontent that had to have been going throughout the country. And it wasn't just the hippies that were upset. It was the rest of America that was upset about it. And, you know, it just happened to be the Make Peace, Not War group, you know, that came out or Make Love, Not War group, groups that came out and got their message across and were out there enough and brave enough to speak out regardless of the consequences. You know, and some of the things that happened to them were honestly quite, you know, we would look at today and be absolutely shocked. I mean, being, you know, groups of them being, you know, hosed down, you know, tear gas and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And, you know, of course, we don't want to forget the Kent State Massacre where the National Guard opened fire on mm-hmm. peaceful protesters. And I would never
real,
want
real
to
quick,
see
James, someone's typing in the background and it's kind of coming through. So whoever's doing the typing, if they could type quieter or just mute their mic until they're done typing, we appreciate it. Unless that's you typing, James, then I guess you'll just have to
it
go and your multitasking.
James, you're typing while you're talking? That's pretty cool.
Multitasking.
I wish I could multitask that well. No, my internet went down just as soon as I got online. I got on here, actually. It's kind of strange.
Sorry about that. I was multitasking.
No problem. Go ahead. That's multitasking is not frowned upon here on Bard's Logic.
Yeah,
I do it all the time.
It.
But go ahead, James. I just want to, you know, get around the background noise so folks can hear you clearly. Go ahead.
Well, really, I think inevitably, we're going to have to step up what we're doing. You know, we're going to have to partner up with other groups that have anything in common that, you know, namely, you know, the upholding of the Constitution. Even if there's only a single facet of it, such as the Second Amendment rights groups, the fact is we've got to literally get millions of people out there on the streets and on overpasses and in the media space and in, you know,
mm-hmm.
our representative space. You know, this is, I mean, we're only 4 months old and, you know, we're coming up on 60,000 people in this movement. I mean, in 4 months, that's quite, I mean, you know, I wish it was 600,000, but let's, you know, we have to be realistic. But the fact is we've all got to step up our game. You know, we've got to be very dead serious about what we're doing with this, and we can't let things distract us from what we're doing. You know, we've got to really put our nose to the grindstone and make this as serious as anything we've ever done in our lives. And it, you know, anybody here that's on the phone, of course, I know you have. You know, any of our national leaders have just really dedicated themselves and devoted themselves. And I mean, my gosh, you know, I'm humbled by their dedication. You know, to think that I would be the one lucky enough to bring an idea out that would spark people into action. So, you know, so to such an extent is just amazing. I can't even put it into words. You know, but we've all got to be able to find a way to ignite that spark in those around us and have that spark from us, you know, that spark that turned into a fire, beginning, you know, start a spark with somebody else. You know, we've got to awaken the American people one way, you know, or another, and, you know, peacefully. You know, we should never be the ones, ever be the ones to begin anything non-peacefully, never. And you know, but we have got to find a way to rekindle the spark of the love of this nation in our people. And, you know, and we've done that, you know, in such a short amount of time. And we just have to continue to fight and to do that. Because, you know, we've got to stop things like Obamacare. You know, fortunately, people say, oh, no, it's all fully funded and da-da-da. Well, there's two bright things about that. And the fact is that you can't get it signed up for it right now because the online sign-up is garbage. And the owner of McAfee, I believe, said that it's a hacker's wet dream. I mean, my gosh, you know, I won't go there. I won't even go to the website after hearing that statement. You know, we've got to unite against that. But it, mm-hmm. Back to what I was saying is, in January, they're going to be back up fighting about it again. And so we've got to step right. up the pressure on them. Everybody does. You know, even if it's making a phone call, keep their phone bank so busy that all you hear is the all circuits are busy signal. America needs to wake up and stand up and say we've had no more, because we are so close to the brink of totalitarian socialism that it's just simply astonishing that we've allowed it to become like it is right now.
Right. No, it's, you know, people fall asleep, and it's a deep sleep, and I think when they're first waking up, they're groggy and kind of, you know, shocked on how things, you know, how they are now, and, you know, and then, of course, a lot of them just like, oh, man, well, I can't deal with this. Not a lot, but, you know, they're, you know, somehow go, oh, I can't deal with this, and then they just, as I said earlier, you know, they go back and say, well, nothing I can really do about it. So I might as well just go ahead and just try to take care of my own and do the best I can with that. So what do you think about that, Robert?
Say that again?
Well, no, I was just saying that, you know, I think people fell into, you know, kind of a deep sleep for a while. And then I think they were so busy just taking care of their own and their own lives, the government kind of, you know, got it past us, and so now they're waking up kind of in a groggy state. You know, you know, when you wake up feeling that way, it takes a while to shake the cobwebs off before you, you know, before you can take action. And so what do you think about that state and how, you know, with what James just said? And then we'll go over to David. And then for those of the folks who like to chime in, you can call us at 347-945-7428, and you can chime in. And also, I'll bring some things here in the chat here shortly, but I want to go ahead and move it over to you for your comments, Robert.
Well, I agree, and we the people have been sleeping or complacent for decades, and we allow this to creep. And I feel we're at that point where we almost can't return from. It's just been so entrenched. You know, they went after the education system, the justice system, all levels of government, and now they're going after our health care. But the one thing that I'm seeing this week is people are waking up, because they are actually seeing what this Obamacare atrocity on We the People is. And there's even Democrats today calling for a delay for the individual mandate so they can try to fix the problem that they created. But I'm very positive, especially a couple weekends ago when we had the partial government shutdown and we had veterans, patriots, truckers, and bikers going to Washington, D.C., and they basically said enough is enough. They tore down those barricades around the memorials, walked them down Pennsylvania Avenue, and stacked them in front of the White House.
Great to see those veterans do that. Go ahead.
I know, and the thing is that we have to try to confront or bypass is the national media. They did hardly any reporting on these events that happened in Washington, D.C., and we the people could only receive the pictures and videos through the social media, through YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. But, you know, I do see a change coming. I just pray and hope that it's a peaceful one because it's time that America stands on its constitutional republic and restore our constitution.
Yeah,
everybody doesn't really
want to
say the word that the revolution is coming, but... I think we're going in the correct direction. Now, I see every day people are waking up, and it's a positive sign.
So we have
to unite and stand together to stop the tyranny coming from Obama and our federal government, which is out of control. That's the real question. Can we unite?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to make one last point. Can we put our differences to a side and unite as Americans, as we the people? Obama and others have been dividing and putting us in groups and having us fight among us, ourselves. Look what's going on in the Republican Party. You know, they're attacking the Tea Party. They're doing this and that. We need to stop all this petty stuff. We need to unite. And it's the only way we're going to be able to save America.
Certainly. And I even, you know, invite folks who may be of different parties, you know, such as Constitution Party, Libertarians, even some, you know, I would say, you know, Green Party. And I would even say, you know, some Democrats and even those who find themselves, you know, across the ideological line and even liberals. And the reason I say that is I think that the problems that are facing America, especially when it comes to government control, is beyond ideologies. I think it's transcended beyond ideologies in where that it's not just, you know, we conservatives that is being that's going to be affected by it. It's also liberals. And moderates and, you know, alike. I mean, this is something that's going to be a detriment to all, regardless of your party affiliation, religion, or, you know, political ideology. And, you know, I see that, you know, once we get the conservatives to stand together and libertarians stand together, we also really need to bring aboard, you know, I know we definitely have a very important distinct differences between with moderates and liberals, but once they understand that this is affecting them too, to their detriment, and really bring it together as we, the people, and where it's beginning to look more and more like the government versus the citizenry. I think then, you know, once we can build that kind of coalition, I mean, I know that's, you know, could be far away, but that's something I think that in the long term is something that's going to, is going to be needed in order to, you know, to fight it. Because we're not just going up against big, you know, big government. I mean, there's big corporations and big money behind that as well. But I do want to bring this up, this article that Josh from the chat gave us that I would like to bring up. It's a real quick article, and since we brought up about delays, it says Democratic senator announces bill to delay Obamacare mandates until 2015. It says, appearing on the O'Reilly Factor on Wednesday, Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat to West Virginia, announced a potential bill that would delay all Obamacare mandates until January 1st, 2015. No fines whatsoever, Manchin said of the bill. He's working on it with Senator Johnny Atkinson, Republican, Georgia. This should be interesting. Works out the kinks. Let's fix this thing. While many argue full repeal is the only way to fix Obamacare, delaying the financial burden for American citizens and businesses until 2015 will still be appealing to many conservatives. Host Bill O'Reilly said he would support, again, I'm going to repeat this, support the bill, and Senator Marco Rubio probably would too. Rubio has also proposed a bill to delay Obamacare's mandates. Manchin confirmed that right now he only has three other Democrats who are willing to work with him on the Obamacare delay bill, but he said he is confident he can get more support from Democrats. Now, this says NBC News reported Wednesday that the White House plans to delay the individual mandate in Obamacare for 6 weeks following the disastrous rollout so far. However, the White House later refuted the report. And I don't bring this up now after I made the previous comments, but what I'm saying is, if anyone makes comments, is I find it kind of suspicious, especially if you have someone such as O'Reilly, which I certainly don't really consider a true conservative, seeing that they would be okay with just pushing back the mandate to 2015. Sounds like kicking the can to me until they can more fully implement Obamacare. And it sounds like if he's willing to leave the mandate, it sounds like that O'Reilly may very well be a supporter of what eventually would be socialized health care, single-payer system. I mean, what do you guys think, David?
I think there's way too much government, and if they're willing to delay it, why not shred it? You know, what else are they working on behind closed doors that they're not telling us? Immigration, mm-hmm. letting 11 million more immigrants in, you know, giving them a driver's license, giving them everything. You know, if us American goes into a different country, we don't walk out to tell about it. We get killed, but you come to America and you're legal, you get jobs, you get free health care, and you get free everything. And us Americans, we the people, work our butts off, and these people get everything, give me, give me, give me. Well, when I was a kid, when I was 4 years old, I asked my parents for something. I said, could you give me this? And my dad looked at me and says, give me died 100 years ago, son. You know, when's Americans going to, you know, wake up? When are you going to be sick and tired of being sick and tired and start, you know, showing up, start representing America, you know? We need to deport the 11 million illegals. They don't need to come here to take our jobs, get our health care, free housing, free taxes for 7 years. You know, I don't have a whole lot of money, and, everything I got, I worked hard for. Nothing was ever given to me. And that just really ticks me off when I see all these immigrants getting all this housing and the jobs, and they want a driver's license. And also, they had a rally. They had their own immigration rally, and the government was supporting them. They have no rights. They're not Americans. So why is the government supporting them? But our government can shut down the World War II memorials that's privately funded. And these vets fought in the war and said nothing stopped them in the past. And they looked at those barricades and said, this is a joke. Time to pick them up and relocate them. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, and here's a book I suggest to everyone to read, Patrick Buchanan. It's called The Death of the West, and it talks a lot about immigration and multiculturalism in there. And also, folks, we also talked about multiculturalism last week during our show, which all of the shows here on Bard's Logic is archived, so folks can go back and listen to all those. But I'll bring the mic over to you, James, and then to Cindy. And for those who are new out there listening to the show, if you'd like to chime in, you can at 347-945-7428. We'll be listening for you. It'd be great to hear from you. So, James, I'll leave the mic to you.
Well, I find it ironic, to say the least, that that they're trying to pass a bill to delay the individual mandate, when in fact the third budget or funding bill that the Republicans in the House sent up to the Senate actually did that. It included funding for Obamacare minus the individual mandate, but yet it was denied. Of course, we know the fourth bill that was sent up by the House included complete funding for Obamacare with the exception that there would be no exemptions. None of the corporations that Obama has pandered to and have pandered to Obama and the liberal left, none of those companies would have been exempt, but yet, for whatever reason, it wasn't good enough to go ahead and pass it that way. It was purely and simply obstructionist by the Senate, led by Harry Reid and Obama. The one bright side, and it's a double-edged sword, is what we're looking at. The bright side to delaying the health care mandate is that we do have elections coming up in 2014. If the Senate ends up being controlled by Republicans, then we could very well be looking at the death of Obamacare by repeal. We could also be looking at the impeachment of President Obama, and so it'd be nice to repeal Obama at that point as well. So that's the positive side to it. The negative side to delaying the individual mandate is the fact that we have 2014 elections coming, and without the necessary pain caused by such a terrible health care law without that pain being inflicted upon the American voters, then they won't have that so strongly on their minds when they go to the polls. And I believe that's actually the ulterior motive behind delaying the mandate, is to actually affect the vote. And because if come April 15th you haven't gotten your health insurance and you get a tax bill for not having it, then you know which way you're going to vote, and they know which way you're going to vote. You're going to vote for whatever person, however crazy they might be, that would replace the person that was in Congress that supported Obamacare. And I believe that is actually their motive behind that. And so, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. And I would almost say, bring Obamacare on. Let America experience it, so that come December I don't remember the actual swearing-in date of new Congress members, but the elections are in November. I would say, bring it on. Let America suffer for a year under it so they can see what the reality of socialism actually is. And by the time 2014 elections roll around in November, not only would Obama be looking at being a lame duck, which he really, if you look at what he's tried to get passed, he's only been able to get one thing passed, and that's Obamacare. He would end up being, aside from his mountain of executive actions and orders, one of the most lame duck presidencies in history, because he really hasn't gotten that much done outside of his executive orders and actions. And so,
and vacation.
I mean, the fact that he spends more money, he'd almost double the money on one vacation that President Bush spent on all of his combined, and that's just absolutely shameful. I didn't hear anything about, any of the previous first ladies having 23 personal assistants. I mean, do they carry her around like an Egyptian queen I don't know what those things are called, but the carriages that they carry them up on their shoulders with. I mean, I can just picture her going around the White House with a riding crop, riding on one of those. What else would you need 23 personal assistants for?
Carry all the shoes.
I think America is, unfortunately, we're going to have to suffer a bit under, and so we can see the reality of...
You might be right there, James. Go ahead.
I certainly don't wish for that, but the fact is that the ones that voted him into office, they need to be woke up, and, well, we already know what a whiny bunch they are, and the easiest way to wake them up is to give them the pain of, give them the fruit of their labors. Let them live with what they voted into office. And, yeah, I think it could be a very big awakening for the liberal left to realize that their agenda is not only painful to people that don't like it, but it's painful to them as well.
Cindy, and real quick, we'll bring on you, Cindy, but 717, I see you'd like to chime in, and we will be opening up your mic shortly. But first, we'll open up the mic to you, Cindy, for comments, and then we'll bring in 717. Go ahead.
Who?
You, Cindy.
What did you say?
I'm bringing you in, and then I'll be opening up 717's mic.
Oh, okay. Well, he was saying everything going to say, so I won't say much, but delaying the mandates is, in fact, this whole process of instituting health care, even from way back before when Hillary started it. It's all been the frog boiling in the water slowly, and Americans have taken it increment by increment by increment. It's been death of a thousand cuts, Chinese water torture, death by needles. It's coming so slowly that it's not we're not going to feel it until it's so hot that we're dead. You know, it's gone. It's over. Nothing's going to save us from this garbage but total repeal. Kicking the can down the road, like you said, delaying the mandates just isn't going to do it. And, you got Howard Dean goes on CNN and he says, well, they're going to have to delay the penalty. They're going to have to delay the penalty because the government can't make people do what they can't do. Well, excuse me, buddy,
wow.
But that's exactly what you are doing. This whole thing is making people do what they can't do. It's making us buy insurance at a price that we cannot afford. And it's making us, if we can't afford the insurance that they give us, we have to pay $4,000 for a fine, and then we got nothing for our $4,000. You don't get any health care for that $4,000. You just give it to the government. So what have you gained? You still have people uninsured. So, I get so angry when I talk about this stuff. Do you guys get angry too?
I agree with you. I do too.
I'm up to my eyeballs in anger over this. It's to the point where I don't even know what to say anymore because I don't cuss.
Yeah, that's we don't do that here on Bard's Logic. Now, we might have some colorful metaphors after the top of the second hour when we go into Bard's Logic after dark, but and that doesn't get anything that you might want to scream out. But we do have a caller who'd like to chime in, and so 717, if you just tell us where you're from and your name, we'd appreciate it. thank you very much for calling into the show. How are you?
What's up, guys? This is Josh Barry. I'm calling from
Pennsylvania. Oh, hey, Josh. Thank you very much for calling to the show.
Hi, Josh.
Good. You're welcome. Now, I was sitting here, I was thinking about Obamacare and looking at it from a business owner's point of view. You know, when you roll out a new program, when you roll out a new idea, a new product, a new service, I mean, it's your baby, you know. And this Obamacare, that was Obama's baby. I mean, it was, I mean, mm-hmm. You want to talk about putting all your eggs in this basket. Well, he did, you know. I mean, you know, and certainly he had his thumb in some other pies, but this was his thing. And as a CEO, you would think that you would be up to date on everything that's relevant to your baby, including this website that's an absolute disaster. You know, to give you an example, and I forget the name of the product that Apple rolled out. And I was listening to the radio the other day, and I heard this being talked about, and it was a great analogy. And it was Steve.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay.
Uh-oh, he must have hit his off button.
Yeah, it's still here on the switchboard, so doesn't look like it hung up.
He might hit his mute button accidentally.
Hello, Josh.
Josh, can you hear us?
Hello, Josh.
Well, we still have him.
Maybe ASA's listening in.
Switchboard. Maybe.
Hello, ASA.
Yeah, I tell you
ASA's,
what. ASA
dropped in on us.
There's been times, though, folks, seriously, where we – remember, Cindy, I know you were here, and I know you were here too, James. Remember we had that one show, and I actually had to delete the archive. The audio was so horrible that, I mean, it just kept breaking up every time folks called in. I mean, you just remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
because,
terrible.
And it makes you wonder, you know, why. But, you know, I want to make a point real quick. I know it's not my turn, but I got to make a point about what he just said real quick. It could be very well that not only did Obama let his baby mess up with this website, but he may have done it on purpose because he did not want it to he did not want it to succeed because of the exact same reasons that James was talking about, that if he had let it go on, then come 2014, people have gotten their tax bill and they're charged this $4,000 and they've got no health insurance to show for it. Now they've paid that and they can't get health insurance anywhere else either. So the Democrats are gone. They're gone out of the Senate. They're gone out of the White House. And so it very well could be that he allowed it to happen on purpose. It was all constructed that way.
And it does look like we have Josh back on the line here, so let's open back up his mic.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Josh.
Great to have you back. Now.
I can hear you guys the whole time. I don't know why you can hear me.
Weird.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, we got you now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's a good start. So where I was going before... does anybody remember the Apple product Mobile Me?
Mobile Me?
I think it was called Mobile Me. It was something that Apple was rolling out. I don't know if it was an app or a service, but here's the point. And I could even have the name wrong, but the point is this product that they were putting out, you know, James called a meeting of this team, and he said, you know, can anybody tell me, but this product, and let's just call it Mobile Me because, you know, it's probably what it is. But can anybody tell me what Mobile Me is supposed to do? And a wide-eyed person, you know, young guy, he raised his hand and explained it. And he said this. And he looked at him and he said, well, then why in the heck doesn't do anything? And on the spot, he disbanded the team. And, the correlation between Steve Jobs and Obama is like the CEO of this project.
why wasn't he on top of all these details? Did he really trust his incompetent cohorts to put this together for him? I mean, that's, to me, that seems like a an act of irresponsibility. If you're,
unless it's on purpose. Well,
yeah, unless it was on purpose. But I did. I was reading up on this Canadian company that put this website together for Obamacare, and I read something that they screwed some other things up too up in Canada. So it may be on purpose, or maybe just they hired the most incompetent people they could possibly find.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I do find that ironic that it is a company from Canada.
You know, so you know, just the point is when you've got a product or a service and it's your baby, it's your golden egg, you would manage it better. I would manage it better. I'm not going to put something out that I know. There's a phrase. It's called hanging out your shingles before you hone your craft, is a phrase I learned. And that's exactly what it is. He's so gung-ho about getting. He doesn't care about all these details. He doesn't care that it doesn't work. He just wanted it out there, I think, which is even further testament to his incompetency.
Well, you know, some people are believing the hype, too, that he's so intelligent. I don't believe that. I don't see him as intelligent at all. He can't even talk without a prompter.
No, and you know when somebody's speaking from the heart because they, you know, they don't need a teleprompter. They may fumble their words here and there, and they may say a couple times while they're speaking. But you know what? You know when they're really speaking passionately. And you know, Obama's a great orator. That's what he is. He's just an orator. He's not a great.
His phone is just breaking up.
Is Josh breaking up again? I tell you what, that poor guy.
Yeah, I'm gonna hang up and I'm gonna not disrupt the program anymore. So I don't know what's going on.
That's
but you
okay,
guys,
it's okay, Josh. Just we can keep trying. If it sounds like you're breaking up, we'll just bear with it and we'll just go that way.
Right.
It's one of the organic aspects of the show, so that's okay. Don't worry about it. But we do have another 717 on the line that we will open up the mic. So go ahead, our second 717, your name and how are you tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing? My name's Rob Civic. I'm a computer guy, and I'm also a state leader for overpasses. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I heard you guys were talking about the health care. Being that I was a computer guy, the first day that the sign-up came out for the website, I actually did it at like 3 in the morning. There was no traffic to the website. The response time to the traffic on the website was 7 milliseconds slower than Google. And I also looked at the code. There's like 3 steps that you need to go through. And the first is like your name and address and all of that stuff. And the third is setting up like your username, password, and setting up security questions. I was clicking on a drop-down menus. There was no code there whatsoever. There was nothing regarding the drop-down menus. I did a view source, which, you know, computer people will understand, but I don't know if you guys will understand it or not. And the JavaScript was basically set to null, which means zero. There's nothing there.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And the second time I tried, because unfortunately we have to register for this just to opt out, the second time I tried it, I was able to get the menu, the drop-down menu and all of that stuff, but it said username already exists. My username is R-S-Z-I-V-E-K. There are only 2 of us that exist on the planet that have that kind of username, and any Fortune 500 company I've worked for, even on Facebook, my username is R-S-Z-I-V-E-K. it said the username already exists when I know I'm the only one in the United States that exists with that kind of username.
Wow.
So the glitch was either it created my username and didn't take any of the other information, or it's just horribly, horribly broken, which I believe it is. I've never seen, and I haven't done coding in a long time. I haven't done coding since the 90s, but I still, from what I understand, this software is that old.
Wow.
Wow.
But, yeah, the coding itself, it was, I don't know what kind of people they hired to do this or anything like that. Back in the 90s, I hosted I owned a web hosting and web design company, and we could have set up something like this for within a matter of weeks, and it automated it so the database would just grow. You know, and from what I'm hearing now, that there's misinformation going to insurance companies. I heard reports that people that are spouses are actually being reported as children.
Oh my gosh!
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah, Fox News had a report earlier that said that I personally haven't verified the report, but they said that they're getting reports from insurance companies that people's spouses are actually getting reported as their children. And,
wow.
Yeah,
maybe
John
maybe
Stewart,
it was written in, I was just going to throw in, maybe it was written in Commodore Basic and not actually anything modern.
They had JavaScript in there. So the first page for you to select your state as to what state you want to register in, that is actual JavaScript. So I don't know what they have running in the background, but if you looked at the code, you could sit there and see that the drop-down menu to select your state was there. That was written in JavaScript. Everything else was set to null, which means that there's nothing there, which means that they never put in the code.
Wow.
Interesting. So which
just further goes to it's further indication that it could be on purpose, because nobody could be that incompetent.
Well, I agree. I think there definitely could be something about that. And I see 404 seeing wanting to chime in. But first, before we bring you in, I do want to hear from David. Want to bring the mic over to him, and if there's any comments you'd like to chiming about on what we've covered so far.
No, I'm pretty much in agreement with everything that was said, and it's just a shame that all that money was wasted on a Mickey Mouse system like that. And
our money.
Yep, exactly. We pay for their vacations and everything else that I talked about earlier about the immigrants and everything that they get in our country. And, you know, it's just, you know, sick and tired, you know. We people got to take America back, you know. And I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity for having this show. Sorry I was late to it. I saw it earlier. But I got to get going. But I just wanted to thank everybody that's on the show tonight. Thanks for having this show, and I plan on calling back again on the next show. And
awesome.
thank everybody for their input. You know, because like gentleman said earlier, it's kind of like a round table. You know, we all got a good discussion going on, and you know, some great opinions being talked about out here. So we need to keep it up. So everybody have a great night and keep up the great work. And I'll see you at the next show.
That's
thanks.
Great.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely call in and share the link, because all the shows here on Bard's Logic are archived for folks to listen to later on. And speaking
Alrighty.
Of that, there's about – go ahead.
I said, all righty. I didn't know they were archived, so I'll be sure and check that out and share it to my friends and all that, because I'm here in Iowa, and, but I'm, like I said, with James' group, over a pass to impeach Obama, and, you know, we're going to get this taken care of, you know. We got to take our country back. So you folks have a good evening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. And you can say it. Thank you, and have a good night. We do have about a little less than 15 minutes left of live time. So all those who are in chat, in about 14 minutes, it will cut off the audio to the show. But the audio will be archived for those who'd like to listen to the rest of the show later. And I believe we will go into what we call here on Bard's Logic the extended period, which lasts a little bit about an hour, so we still have plenty of time. But for those who want to listen or chime in to the extended version, you could do so at area code 347-945-7428. Again, that's if you just like to listen, or, of course, if you'd like to chime in during the extended period. But if not, then I just want to let you know that it will cut things off. But, of course, you're welcome to listen to the archive and share that as well. So at this time, I will be opening up 404. If you could just tell us where you're hailing from and your name, we'd appreciate it. And I want to thank you very much for coming on to the show. How are you?
I'm good, man. This is Naj in Atlanta. Interesting conversation you guys got going. I want to kind of approach it from another angle, though, if
certainly
allowed. Okay, I'm not a fan of either party. I consider them to be what they are. But one interesting thing from this whole healthcare debate is how it was passed. The idea that you don't need support from the other side as long as you can gin up support from your side and kind of, you know, get the narrative you want out in the news. So I say the healthcare thing is not an Obama administration thing. It would be a Democratic Party thing, no matter who is in office. And I would ask the next administration, which is probably going to be Republican, will they bring up the Social Security issue that Bush tried to do, and will they get it passed? Because the Obama healthcare situation set precedent for passing things without the support or any support from the other side. So I know I took a long way to get there, but do you kind of get where I'm going with this?
Well,
yeah.
Certainly, I think
you're saying,
up a
you're
very
saying
good point.
What's good for them is good for us.
That's an excellent point. Go ahead, Susan.
He's right.
Well,
I
think it's bad for the American people on all sides, though, either way.
Right.
If either party
right
gets in and decides they're going to do X, Y, and Z, and, you know, they can artificially pump up support for it, then we're in trouble because both parties have ideas that the American people pretty much do not agree with, and they couldn't get done without it.
You're right.
Yes,
you're
that's some good.
If I may comment.
Go ahead.
Sorry, if I may comment on Social Security. Being a former business owner, I don't know if a lot of Americans know this or not, but we, under federal law, we have the right to opt out of Social Security. Problem is that most employers won't allow it. I own
right
my own. I own my own companies. I owned an S corp and a limited liability company, and I never forced anybody to pay into Social Security if they didn't want to. I gave options to we were small companies. We gave people options to: do you want to pay into Social Security? If you don't, do you want us to set up being smaller gives you a lot more choices than, you know, working for huge companies? Because I've worked for huge companies, and I told them I didn't want to pay into Social Security. I wanted to. Well, you don't have that option. That's an automated system, and the money's going to be taken out of Social Security, for Social Security. But by law, you actually have the right to opt out. And if you work for a small company, they should give you that choice. But A lot of them don't because it makes their accounting more complicated. When you have a small company, when you have a small company, the accounting, you know, it's not going to be that complicated. If you have like 10, 15, 20, 50 employees, it's not going to be that complicated. But when you're talking about like thousands or tens of thousands of people, you know, I worked for companies like Siemens Medical Systems. I worked for companies like Lockheed Martin. You're talking a huge accounting nightmare if you're going to give people the option to opt out of Social Security. What I think they need, what I think they need to do is, I think Congress needs to be, it's to sit there and actually enforce the law that's on the books, to sit there and say if people want to opt out of Social Security, they should be able to opt out of it. Set up your own 401k, set up your own IRA, set up your own pension fund, however you want to do it. It's your money. You're earning it. And every time the government has problems, they sit there and they threaten Social Security, they sit there and they threaten Medicare, and this is something we pay into, and why are we threatened with it? Why don't they ever threaten welfare? You know, and
they do all the time. They threaten social and welfare. Those are the easiest things to go after. But I disagree with what you feel about it, but I understand and think people should have the right to do that. But my biggest issue with Social Security is the government is able to stick their hands into the jar and write IOUs for later. That's the biggest issue. That's supposed to be our money. It shouldn't be touched.
Yeah.
But I can see his point on that. I'm just coming from the other side of it. I think Social Security is the best program we ever created as far as Americans.
No, I understand what you're saying, but the problem is like you're saying, I totally agree with you. Why is it that they get to put their hands in the cookie jar? They should have absolutely no, I was living in Pennsylvania 10 years. I actually worked for the state. The state pension fund is run by individual people, and the government, the state government and the federal government actually have absolutely no control nor right to put their hands into that cookie jar, to go after the pension fund, to borrow from the pension, or anything like that. They don't have the right. Social Security should be set up the same way. We're paying into it, you know, albeit you're forced to pay into it by most companies. They shouldn't have access to it. They should not have access to it at all. They shouldn't have access to Social Security, they shouldn't have access to Medicare, and I also believe they shouldn't have access to welfare. Okay, you can fund welfare. That comes from the taxpayer money, and I'm not against welfare to help out people that really need help. I'm against welfare when I'm sitting there, I'm reading news articles that they're actively going out excuse me, and looking for people to put on food stamps. They're actively going out to look for the people, to put people on welfare, you know, and all of this stuff and everything. I don't know if you folks heard about the Jesse Jackson situation, but not Jesse Jackson, but Jesse Jackson Jr. Suddenly he got diagnosed with a mood disorder syndrome, and he was a congressman. He was tried for various offenses, and he's now pulling an $8,700 a month pension because he got this diagnosis.
Wow.
How does that work? Where do I get a job like that?
Real quick, gentlemen and ladies, let me chime in here for a moment or a few moments here. Is I do see that that there's only 5 minutes of live time. Now, there's still plenty of time because there will be the extended version, as I said earlier, so there's still plenty of time to continue this discussion. But for those who are in chat listening to it but have not called in, that's the only way to hear
at least live, the extended version, is by calling in at 347-945-7428. Again, it's 347-945-7428 if you'd like to listen live to the extended version. But if you cannot, for whatever reason, you're, of course, more than welcome to listen and share the archive that will be available immediately after the show. But so if you want to check that out, that's fine, too. So we will bring it back to you guys. I just want to give folks at least a few minutes opportunity to call in if they'd like to listen to the live extended version. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to respond to some of the things he was just saying. I guess the biggest thing with welfare to understand is big business, because people go and buy usually boxed products, already made food and things like that, and it kind of helps them to move what they have to move, helps the grocery stores move what they have to move. So that's why it's always going to be an issue. But no matter what, I think it's looking at the end of it and not looking at the beginning. So we say we got 30 million people on welfare right now. So do we focus on the welfare recipients, or do we focus on jobs and infrastructure to where we don't have as many? So that's my only issue with it. But completely understand everything he said about Jesse Jackson Jr. That, as he stated it, I believe it's true.
Yeah, no, we need to look at it from both angles, because, like I said, my family came here to this country with nothing, with suitcases and $1,000 debt. And they worked and they worked and they worked and they worked. This was back in 1956, and they came here with nothing. They came here with a debt, and they worked. And the problem is government has become so constrictive and so complacent. You know, okay, you work, you don't work, whatever, all of that stuff. To them, it doesn't matter. To them, what matters, and this is Republican or Democrat alike, to them what matters is who's going to vote for them. Who's going to vote for them? And they don't listen to the American people anymore. They sit there and listen to the money. They sit there and listen to the money, and who's going to finance my campaign, and this and that and the other thing, and they're going to keep doing that unless we change the system. And what needs to happen is basically what everything boils down to is reform of political campaign finance. I mean, it needs to reform across the board. The problem is that it's not going to happen because, you know, okay, only the Congress can impeach Obama. Only the Senate can sit there and agree with that impeachment. Then, in regards to the House, if you have somebody doing some criminal activity, it's only the House members that can sit there and bring up criminal allegations. How does that work? All of you guys got your same hands in the same cookie jar, and you're going to sit there and accuse this guy of being criminal while you're doing the same thing? It works the same way in the Senate. Unless we change those rules, it's not going to happen. And I don't know if you folks have heard about the we're only two states away from a constitutional convention. We got to work on getting those states to do it to rein in our federal government, because, you know, I'm not a fan of Bush, because the Patriot Act, and I'll honestly admit I agreed with it to begin with, but then when I realized what it was, I didn't agree with it. Then it got extended. Then in 2012, the NDAA got authorized, you know, that basically any political politician, anybody holding any kind of office, from a police officer to anybody holding any kind of public office, can sit there and deem you a terrorist, and it's going down the toilet. And I'm afraid in 2014, if we don't change things, we're done. We're done. So
I'd like to bring in other members on the call here, and I do see some other folks who did call in to listen to the extended version. If you'd like to chime in, just send a or just push one on your number dial and let me know you'd like to chime in. But as I said, we got plenty of time. We've got maybe just a little bit less than an hour. So what at this time, I would like to continue the discussion with you, James, and see if there's anything you'd like to add in there. And then also then bring it to you, Cindy. And then we'll roll it back around to Naj and Rob. And I think we still may have Josh here on the line if he'd like to chime in as well. That's fine. So go ahead, James, and then Cindy, and we'll move on from there.
Well, in response to the guy in Atlanta, what was your name again? I'm terrible with names. Are you still there?
Was that Naj or was that Rob?
Yeah, I believe it was Naj.
Anyway, what's up?
Okay, well, I mean, you know, listen to what you said about the welfare system. I mean, it absolutely, you know, it does need reform. We absolutely have to take care of our most needy in America because, you know, the American people are amazingly compassionate. I mean, we send out billions of dollars every year across our country and across the world in charities. And that's not even including the government money that gets sent out. But then just charities alone from Americans get sent out. And, you know, to help people that are less fortunate. So, I mean, that's part of the American spirit, to help those that are less fortunate. But we absolutely have to reform it. People that are capable of working have no business being on welfare. And this mood disorder that, you know, Jesse Jackson Jr. was diagnosed with, I mean, I think any one of us could be diagnosed with it, because if you have the same mood all the time, well, you've got a disorder right by itself. So, I mean, you know, these bogus diagnoses that are happening, you know, to put people on welfare, it really needs to be much more stringent. That way those that are on it are within a system that doesn't get overwhelmed, because I don't know if you've ever been, you know, anybody here has ever been on the unfortunate end where they had to get on Medicare or whatever because perhaps they got hurt at work. But I've got friends that are on that right now, and the level of health care they receive is just quite literally atrocious, and that's because the system itself is overwhelmed by people that don't need to be on it. We have got to do an absolute reboot of what is going on in our government, the entitlements to go out, the political contribution reform. I mean, we have got a long, long drawn-out process. You know, and as far as getting people off of welfare and things like that, is the first thing, the best and easiest way to do that nationally is to have an economy that's booming. And unlike what the progressive, socialist, liberal agenda states, and the best way to do that is to reduce taxes. That's a twofold thing in how it helps. One, if you reduce business taxes, they've got more overhead or more capital to hire people. They can lower prices on products, or at least not raise them any, because, you know, the odds of them lowering them are pretty slim once they've set the precedent on the price. But they can go a longer period of time without having to raise the price because they're meeting their bottom line. The other thing that a lower tax rate does is it puts more money back into the pockets of the people that are actually out there spending it. We have a consumer economy here. And, you know, and then when you take on something, you add on like our Affordable Health Care Act, that actually stifles the economy in a multitude of ways. We have to look at capitalism as a much more, and a booming economy is a much more serious option. And what can be done to boost the economy, you know, because that is what will bring in tax revenue. That is what will fund the things. Taking money away from people who hire people will not do anything to improve the lives of those out there that are actually doing the work and the ones that are actually out there buying things. You know, we really need to cut Social Security back to what it was originally intended for, and that is those that are obviously disabled, that cannot work, and for the elderly. And that way, you know, we obviously, nobody wants to see homeless elderly people out in the streets because they can't afford to go anywhere because they have no money. That's not something that we should ever do here in America. But the fact is that they've all become more bloated, and it's all for a purpose and an intent. And that intent is to get people lazy. So they are dependent on government. They don't remember, or they were never taught what the value of work is. And, you know, we've got to reinstill that into people. I mean, there's nothing more satisfactory to, I think, any human anywhere to set a goal to do something, working hard to succeed at it, and in achieving that goal, even if that goal is just simply to be able to make enough money to pay your bills, that to sit, to have that comfort, that feeling that of accomplishment on an individual level, and that, you know, again, that touches back to something that I brought up earlier, and that's, you know, individual achievement, individualism, and getting away from this socialist collectivism nonsense. And stop watering down the value of each person in this country. We've got to, you know, reform our government on such a dramatic level that individualism and individual achievement means something in this nation again. And once we can do that, if we can do that, we can turn this country around. And it will be a long time before this collective agenda ever shows up, but you know, that's what we've got to do, and we've got to stop things like, you know, the Health Care Act and other collective type laws that stifle the individual achievement. And that's the sickness that's going on in this country right now, is the individual achievement is being supplanted and replaced by the collective thing, where the individual no longer has value even to themselves, because, you know, it doesn't take a village to do something. It takes a person with determination.
Cindy?
All right. Can I respond to that, or you'll move on?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Well, yes, go ahead, and then Cindy, if you'd like to chime in.
Okay, I guess the first thing I would say is I don't subscribe to any dogma, whether it's liberal or conservative, especially when it comes to economics. You can't solve new age global problems with old world solutions. So you say, okay, well, if we just lower taxes, that'll open up things, businesses will be able to operate like they want to. Well, what we found out over the last couple of decades is businesses will say there's uncertainty, and they will sit on their money rather than risk it in a shaky economy. So I don't think that's a real solution. If you have no tax base, you get Detroit. The city can't pay for itself, and before you know it implodes. So I'm not one to say that the solution is simple. We just need to do X. And then when it comes to welfare reform, yeah, no problem. We do need to reform it. But should it be first on the list? Shouldn't campaign finance reform be first to make sure people in office are accountable to voters and not corporations or wealthy people who are bankrolling their next election?
Amen. I agree completely.
So I don't disagree with you as far as, you know, that's concerned. As far as work ethic and things like that, you're talking about individual ideas and what people are influenced by. But I don't know. It's way too easy to just say, most of the poor are lazy. I don't think it's true. I think you got a section of them, but I wouldn't say all or most. So I just think it gets shaky when we start talking about it, and it becomes more emotion than it does facts.
Can I interject here?
Sure, go ahead, but then I do want to bring Cindy in, because we haven't had her come on for a little bit, so go ahead.
Okay, I just want to comment the last statement. No, most people that are poor are not lazy. The problem is the lazy are abusing the system that we put in place for the poor. We have thousands of vets in this country, tens of thousands of vets in this country that are homeless, that are poor,
yep.
that don't get, I'm a vet myself, they don't get the proper medical care. They don't get, because for some reason, for one reason or another, you know, they're not qualified for our system. They're not, the VA, I think the VA is another thing that needs to be revamped because they're treating our vets like, you know, all right, we don't have the funding, so we're not going to take care of you. Wait a second. They are the way they are because of wars. They fought
right.
for you, and they're homeless on the street,
mm-hmm.
which is wrong, which is totally wrong. And that's another system entirely. But they're also thrown into the welfare system, and they're also thrown into whatever and all of that stuff. But as a vet, you're entitled to the VA. You're entitled to veterans benefits. You're entitled to medical treatment. You're entitled to all of that stuff. You served your country. You wrote a check up to and including your life for your country. And you can't get housing. You can't get medical treatment. You can't get any of that stuff. That's appalling. That's mm-hmm. beyond appalling. I don't even know what to label it as. Yeah, there's a lot of vets that have a lot of medical issues due to a lot of, and they, instead of the VA taking care of it, they end up getting thrown into the Medicaid system, which shouldn't be. There
right.
should be more, with all the funding, the Department of Defense gets, they should be opening up more VA hospitals. They should be opening up more VA housing. They should be opening up more VA care for these people. But they don't do it. They don't do it. Why? Because it's not a political agenda. That's the whole problem. That's the whole problem with the vets. And then in regards to the welfare situation, I think that the reform that needs to happen there is they need to sit there and say, okay, you have a specific disability. Let's look at what you can do as opposed to what you can't do. Let's try to help you. It should be like unemployment. Okay, you're on welfare. Let's figure out what you can do, what you can be successful at, what you can do for yourself, and let's work from there, and we'll support you instead of just, you know, all right, you can't work, here's a check. That's the kind of reform we need. And until we have that, situation is just going to get worse.
Okay, and Cindy, we definitely want to hear from you. So with all we've covered here, so the mic is yours.
Okay.
If you're there. there
yeah,
you are.
I
always
get away.
I keep forgetting. I have to wait for that pause because then you unmute your mic. So I have to remember that. Go ahead. Thank
you. Yeah, well, okay, I am here, and I've been listening very carefully, and I've had a million things to say, but since we don't have a whole lot of time left tonight, I'm going to spend my time telling you the story of Davy Crockett, not his life story, his story as a United States House of Representatives back in the 1820s and 30s. One night, Crockett and his buddies were on the Capitol steps, and they saw fire in the distance. And the village of Georgetown was burning. The congressmen rushed to the village. They helped to put out the fire. And then the next morning, they proceeded to set aside all other business, and they voted to give $20,000 from the government treasury, that's tax money, to aid the families whose possessions were burned in the fire. Colonel Davy Crockett was one that voted in favor of the gift. Well, the following summer, Mr. Crockett was campaigning in his home district, and he came across a farmer named Horatio Funz. And apparently, according to his neighbors, he was widely known for his remarkable intelligence, incorruptible integrity, and for a heart brimful and running over with kindness and benevolence, which showed themselves not only in words, but in acts. Well, Davy Crockett later reported of Mr. Bunce that he said, if everyone who professes to be a Christian lived and acted the way he does, the religion of Christ would take the world by storm. Mr. Bunce did not have much formal education. He had a deal of common sense, though. He was well acquainted with the operation of the federal government. That's the thing. Like, you know, some of us are not so acquainted, some of us are, but basically this guy knew what was going on. He kept up with Washington news, even back then. He had no computer, no iPod. He knew that Congressman Crockett had voted in favor of that $20,000 gift. So when Crockett comes along campaigning, he says, I shall not vote for you again, Mr. Bunce told him. Mr. Bunce told the colonel that Congress is giving $20,000 to those fire victims was an unconstitutional act. Since Colonel Crockett had voted in favor of the gift, he had voted against the Constitution. Mr. Bunce said, it is not the amount, Colonel, that I complain of. It is the principle. Congress has no right to give charity. Individual members may give as much of their own money as they please, but they are not to touch a dollar of the public money for that purpose. He said, the people have delegated to Congress by the Constitution the power to do certain things. To do these, it is authorized to collect and pay money, and for nothing else. Everything beyond this is usurpation and a violation of the Constitution. Well, Davy Crockett recognized the truth of what Mr. Bunce was saying and promised he would mend his voting record. Mr. Bunce pledged to help Crockett in his reelection campaign, and the two became close friends. From that time on, Davy Crockett tried to keep Congress in the business of constitutional government and out of the business of unconstitutional charity, which can be handled much more wisely by concerned individuals and groups than by a central government. That came out of a textbook for my homeschooled grandchild.
Interesting.
No, actually, this was actually my son's textbook back when he was a kid. And that's the kind of thing that is still being taught in public schools,
especially homeschooled.
Homeschoolers and private schools still teach this, but it is not being taught in our classrooms. So we think that every time someone has any problem, the government has to jump in there and do it. They have taken the blessings, speaking as a Christian, because I'm a Christian, I know that not everybody on this call is, and that's okay, but speaking from a Christian point of view, the way I see it, it is taking my blessing away when the government takes my money and uses 80% of it on administration costs instead of on the job that it needs to be put to. That is a waste of my money that I could be helping people in my own neighborhood. I could have helped the guy that I came across at the coffee shop the other day, a veteran who was homeless, and he was just trying to get to his home in Pennsylvania. He wanted to spend the holidays with his family, and he was trying to get there and couldn't buy a bus ticket. I didn't even have the money in my checking account to give this guy a bus ticket. I mean, if the government would give me back what's mine and let the free enterprise system work, my husband and I wouldn't be in the middle of a crisis. We're living off of our savings right now. Everything we do is off of our savings right now. And so I can't, that ties my hand. I cannot give to people when I want to. And yet 80% of what we give to what they extort from us is used for nothing. Administration, paper pushers, people who sit in front of their computer and play games, people who sit there and log on to
sessions of Congress playing games.
Exactly. And I don't know if you saw this, but apparently there's a video out there now where when congressmen are absent, another congressman will reach over and press his button and vote for him.
Oh, wow.
Now, come on. I mean, this is the kind of thing I'm paying for with my tax dollars? I'm sorry, but I'm with Davy Crockett and Mr. Bunce. Let me and my church and the neighborhood center down the road, let us take care of the people here in this county. And the government, the central federal government needs to stay the heck out of it. And yes, if our county decides we want to help right here, then we can collect a buck or two from people so that we can help the homeless here. And we can help our own families because we know exactly who needs what. I know what that man needed. The government doesn't know. The federal government has no clue who really needs this stuff they're throwing out there. They're just sending out checks left and right. Here, have a free phone. Here, have some more money. Here, have food stamps. Whatever you need. What, you know, they don't have a clue all the fraud that's going on out there. People collecting those stupid things and then selling them. I've seen people sell food stamps.
I heard of one time where they actually were able to use an EBT card at that's what they have at some places, at a, I'm having a brain freeze here, at a casino. They're actually able to swipe their card at a casino. Can't remember exactly where that was. I think maybe in Indiana or something. I'm not sure about that. But yeah,
well,
I'd like to do
that's
it.
That's got
to
be fraud,
to,
but that's fraud.
Yeah. Let's get some reaction, then we'll start with Naj, and then we'll move to Rob, and then you, James. So, Naj, what do you think?
Well, I guess another big problem is when things get taken over by the government, after a while, we assume that they always had them. A lot of the programs and different things that we have to help Americans struggling were created by the American people raising a ruckus and talking to politicians and getting something worked out, and then the government later on co-opts it and acts like they're this benevolent thing that thought of it. But no, it actually came from the people, and you can go to any big program that we have and you'll find that. Now, the thing, like I said, that concerns me is there's so much media out here that directs us to attack the poor, attack the welfare holders, attack the homeless. 40% of the homeless are veterans, former veterans. So that's something that we have to deal with. So the issue is, do we start talking about some of these wars that we're being led into that are leading to these veterans who are out here with the government who will not support them or help them after they come back, or do we focus on welfare? As I said before, man, I have no problem with someone saying we need to restructure it and make sure that we're getting people off of welfare and into work. Nothing wrong with that. Of course, that should be a priority. But, man, do we have bigger issues? New global economy, and we have to figure out how we can get Americans to work. Do we need to get rid of some of these larger companies and go back to local small business economies to get fuller employment? I mean, do we have to go back to a milkman to make sure people here have jobs? I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm definitely not qualified to speak on that. But there has to be a priority that we take and say, okay, this issue is most important. Campaign finance, term limits. We have to figure out how we get the big problems solved, and then we slowly move down to the smaller things, because that welfare is just a drop in the bucket. That Department of Defense, and as she said, administration in government, those are the big bills. How do we figure out how to balance these big bills before we start tinkering with the small stuff that is not going to fix the big problems we have anyway?
Rob, would you like to chime in on that or answer to that?
Yeah, Raj, I completely agree with you. What we need to do is we need to have basically a reform of welfare of the Veterans Administration. We need to have a reform of, I don't know how else to put it, but the entire government, because our veterans aren't being taken care of. Our poor are being taken care of improperly. And, sister, God bless you. You were absolutely right in regards to that veteran. He needs a ride home, you know, to go celebrate with his family. And how does he do that? We're broken. Everything is broken. And the reason it's broken is because every time I look around to it and all of that stuff, it's got to do with the politicians that are elected, and it's got to do with campaign finance reform. Because these guys only worry about, you know, who funded their campaign and how did they get elected and all of that stuff. And unfortunately, in this country, too much apathy has set in. You know, I got my job, I got my house, I got this, I got that. I'm not going to worry about anything else that's going around. And that's
the whole problem. People are trying to get there. They're trying to attain what, you know, we call the American dream, and they're working hard to get that.
Oh, no. I know people are trying very hard. I know there's people that are trying very hard to get that. But the problem is you own a small business, you got to sit there and figure out what your tax laws are because of the federal government. I owned a trucking company. I had to sit there and buy fuel in Pennsylvania in order to drive wherever I was driving, because Pennsylvania has the highest fuel tax in the nation, and that's federal and state. So if I didn't buy my fuel tax in Pennsylvania, and I bought fuel someplace else, I had to pay taxes on it. But if I always bought my fuel in Pennsylvania, I always knew I was getting a refund at the end of the quarter because they have the highest fuel tax, which is ridiculous. And the government does this. It's not the people. It's the government. Every business decision that is made by any company has to do with who do we have in office and how do we get rid of this tax. That's the whole problem. We need to reform campaign finance. We need to get term limits on these people. We need to get rid of, you know, these golden parachutes for these politicians. It's like, okay, yeah, I served one term. I served one term in Congress. I worked there 2 years. I got a pension for life, and
right.
I get medical insurance for life. We need to get rid of that. We need to get rid of all of that. We need
one of the things, real quick, Bob, I would interject here just for a few moments, is that when we covered the elections, you know, this past 2012 cycle, is I interviewed a lot of folks from alternate parties. I know Nosh mentioned he's not a big fan of the Democrats or the Republicans. And after the convention, I was pretty jaded on the Republicans, of course, the Democrats for me. But, you know, the Republicans, well, especially the way that the election was handled, and the primaries handled in the convention. And I interviewed a lot of folks from, like, the Constitution Party. And the gentleman that was their presidential candidate, he was from Virginia, it was Virgil Goode, interviewed him. And one of the things that he campaigned on, and I think this is why I think, you know, at least locally, the alternative parties deserve, you know, a looking at, such as the Constitution Party, is because one of the things he campaigned on was a constitutional amendment for term limits. And he said, well, you know, he talked about exactly what you guys are saying is, you know, they're so concerned about, you know, getting reelected and getting the money to be reelected. You know, they're not working for the people anymore. They're not representatives anymore. It's to the point where we are the new serfs who are, you know, basically working for them, when, of course, we all know that's not how it was intended. So, as I said, that was, you know, Virgil Goode from the Constitution Party who was talking about, you know, with term limits. So, but go ahead. I just wanted to bring that up while we're on that topic, Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. We need term limits, because the reason we need term limits is Jesse Jackson Sr., he got that diagnosis. He was a congressman. He gets an $8,700 a month pension.
Wow.
How does that work? That should not exist. In regards to Obamacare.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, no.
I don't want to take this to tin hat, you know, tin foil talk. When you're talking about Jesse Jackson Jr. and the fact that they're protecting him like that and giving him that little chunk of change, it's because either he knows something that they don't want him speaking about, or he's involved with people who don't want to be brought to the light. They're not giving him this because they're nice guys. It's not how they work. So there's something else going on.
Unfortunately, that is how it works, because had it not been him, had it been any congressman that came down with this issue, that's what they would have gotten. They need to serve one term, and they can retire, and they get a full pension. The only way they don't get a full the only way they don't get a full pension is because they're criminally charged. And I believe the reason he got this diagnosis is because the House was considering bringing charges against them. And that's the whole problem. We need to take the House and the Senate. We need to sit there and put them on 401Ks like we're on, the entire House and Senate. We need to sit there and tell them, no, you don't have a golden umbrella. You have what you have. You serve 2 years, you got a two-year pension. That's all you got. You serve 6 years, you got a six-year pension. We need term limits. The reason is because the longer they're in the House or the Senate, the more power they establish. The more power they establish, the more they become chairmen of committees and this and that and the other thing, and they have far more influence on policy. And it shouldn't be that way. I mean, how is it that the U.S. Senate, which is Democrat, okay, has the power of policy over energy for the entire country? How is it the U.S. House has power over financial stuff for the whole country? They're not my representatives. They're not. They're not there. People who are not my representatives exert power over me, and I never voted for them. I never elected them. I never did anything for them. I might have wrote a letter to piss them off, but it's that's basically what it boils down to. It's the government is sitting there putting more and more people to have power over us that we didn't have a voice in. And that's the problem. That's the biggest problem. That's why I want campaign financial campaign reform.
Financial reform. Real financial reform, not this BS that McCain put and Feingold put together. James, we'll bring in, and what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, back to Roger. Now, I wasn't trying to insinuate that poor people are lazy, not by any stretch of the means. I mean, I have never been rich myself. I don't know what I would do with myself if I ever got that way. The system needs reforming, and not because people are lazy, but because the system is just broken. It wastes billions of dollars. People are. I actually saw a chart earlier this year that showed that somebody that was on welfare actually can receive so many benefits that it encourages them to not work, because if they went back to work, their quality of life would decrease. Now, that's a reversal of the way the system should be. I'm not saying you should make people on welfare suffer. But on the campaign reform, you know, one of the biggest things that we need to do as far as that goes is not just campaign reform, it's just contribution reform. These giant super PACs that exist simply need to be abolished. The money needs to be, I mean, certainly they've got donors that it came from. They need to be shut down, and they need to go over their books, and every penny that was ever taken in needs to be sent back and say, sorry, try again. You know, go spend this somewhere else, because we're not using it for this anymore. And there's just a large number of these massive PACs out there with hundreds of millions of dollars that directly influence our government in a way that's not good for the American people. Contributions to politicians at one point were called a bribe, and they were illegal. And, you know, and of course, with term limits in mind, the thing with term limits is it is exactly like Robert was saying, it prevents their from gathering too much influence, too much power, and it also stops them from being indebted to those that help them. So you could actually begin the process of their entitlement reform or bribery reform that they have with the special interests that get to visit them on a regular basis, with term limits, because those special interests would have less influence over them, and they would be less inclined to give money to a politician who has already served his own, you know, his maximum amount of time. And, you know, I think term limits would go a long ways towards limiting the influence those PACs have on the politicians. You know, but the fact is, these lobbyists that come in from corporations, quite simply, should be illegal for them to do so. There should be no reason whatsoever, legally or morally, for any of them to be able to stroll in there, ask a politician to support a certain bill, and then receive any funding for it. That's called a bribe. And how they have managed to do it, I don't know. And you touched on the on McCain's campaign reform. That just that this reform, I mean, it reformed campaign financing, all right. It made it worse.
Right.
And I mean, it's been an absolute nightmare. I mean, billions of dollars being spent on running for an office, and that's ridiculous. It should never take that much. I mean, if they had to cancel all campaign financing other than, $100 per individual voter, and you have to send in a check, I think that would be a real big step in the right direction, or $100, however much, but not some exorbitant amount. And, but something in those lines has to be done. But we have got to find a way, whether it be through constitutional convention, and I think that's an ideal way to go about it. When the states stand up to the federal government, and the fact that they're preparing to do so should say volumes to those in Washington, D.C. They wouldn't like it if I were put in charge of their pensions, because it would be retroactive. Anybody that's getting it, you are cut off. You can live off Social Security. Oh, wait, you don't like that because you haven't properly funded it all this time? Well, so sorry. You have to live with the problem you created, but there you go. It's your, you made the bed, you sleep in it. And I believe that if they were given those options where they had to, once they were finished in their job, they had to simply return to American society and not be a part of the elite, then we would not have many of the issues that we have currently going on in the federal government. The fact is that they've set up a system to where once they're there, they're no longer among the normal people. I mean, I understand John Boehner and Harry Reid, when they went to Congress, were not very rich. I understand that Harry Reid was actually in the hole. He was very poor when he went. His personal finances were a wreck. You couldn't tell looking at him. Now he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, how exactly does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it happens because he was bribed with favors. Hey, if you pass this law for us, we'll let you, we'll slip you this deal. And that kind of nonsense has to end.
But to my understanding, inside trader laws didn't apply to them either.
No, it doesn't. And that kind of thing actually, I mean, it absolutely has to come to an end. It has to come to an end because they are not working for their interests. They're working for their own. And it doesn't matter to them what happens, because once they get there, they're outside of the loop and they're outside of the system of America. They have
sure, they're still insulated against anything. It doesn't matter to them.
Well, exactly.
If I can comment really quick, for those of you that don't know, any type of election fundraising that is raised for a politician, if they decide to retire, that money is transferred into their salary.
Mm-hmm.
And just think about this one. Between Romney and Obama, over $1.2 billion with a B dollars were spent getting an office pays $500,000 a year.
Right.
So you can't sit there and say there's no corruption. There's no way you could sit there and say there's no corruption. $1.2 billion on a presidential campaign for a job that pays $500,000 a year. And it's ridiculous.
As if $500,000 wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Well, and then the free clothes and trips and everything else that's paid for by, the tax dollars. So does that burn your does that burn you, Cindy?
Say again?
Hello, Cindy.
She may have had to step away. I know when she's not on the mic, she mutes herself. But I guess maybe she had to step away for a little bit. But I just want to let the folks here on the line, and also the folks listening to the archive, that we do have about Only 15 minutes left, amazingly enough, of showtime, and I do like to spend the last 5 minutes of the show, you know, doing my closeout. So what I like to do is, let's see, currently we have just about five of us on the line. So what I'd like to do is for the remaining folks here, and that's you, Robert, you, Naj, Cindy, when she comes back, and James, what I'd like to do towards the end of the show is to give each one of you just a couple of minutes, about 2 minutes each, to make any closing comments that you'd like to make, you know, about anything, and then we'll move it this way. First, we will go with you, Naj, and then we'll go to Robert, and then we will go to Cindy if she comes back on, and then you, James, and then I'll proceed to close out. So the first 2 minutes we've got for closing out gives you, Naj. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess piggybacking on the corruption angle he was taking, the problem now is the corruption is actually legal and within the system. You take it back to the Clinton years, Robert Rubin, Secretary of Finance, he's the one who helped get rid of Glass-Steagall as far as the law. Mm-hmm. There's no problem if a law becomes unpopular or something like that and you change it. The problem becomes when after he leaves office, he goes to work for those financial institutions who he helped by removing that law. So that's the problem. The corruption is built in now. So we have corrupt people out here doing things wrong, and there's really no penalty. And as far as the other thing, this will just be my last comment on welfare, period. Any human system will have its little bit of corruption in it because that's just how some people are. Think of yourself at work, how some raggedy person at your office stole somebody's lunch. Happens at every office building. It doesn't mean you need to get rid of office lunch. It means you need to find out who the culprit is. You know what I mean? So
welfare's got
a lot of single mothers with kids working two jobs trying to get by. And then you also have raggedy people taking advantage of the system. So the question becomes, what is the balance between them? Do we have more fraud than we have people who actually need it or not? And I don't think we can answer those tough questions. And that's why the welfare conversation gets so emotional and heated. And before you know it, people are calling people names and not even having a real discourse anymore. So that's my 2 cents on it.
Well, thank you very much, Naj. I really appreciate you coming in tonight. And, of course, you're more than welcome to, you know, call back in subsequent shows. And we'd be more than happy to have you in. And so
I'll second that. I've enjoyed them being here.
Yeah,
hey,
great.
Thanks a lot.
Awesome. You know, I definitely like these roundtable discussions, and that's how I pretty much like to do every show. And, of course, sometimes, well, in a lot of times, I should say, we do have guests who come on. And then we'll have them come on out, and I'll do interviews here on the show. And then afterwards, if we're open to questions, we bring folks in, you know, to ask the guests questions. And then after they go for the evening, that we open up the show to discussion and roundtable. So we'll bring it over to you, Robert. Rob, thank you very much. Go ahead.
All right, thanks. I don't know if Naj is still on the line or not, but Naj, I absolutely and totally agree with you. We need to figure out a way as to how the system is being abused. I know people that abuse it. And unfortunately, I want to do something about it, but if I did something about it, it would actually become detrimental to me. It's a very difficult scenario. It has to do with family. If I did something, it would alienate me from so many people that you have no idea. And I wish I could do something about it. The welfare system is absolutely well-intended. We have to take care of our poor. We have to take care of our hungry. We have to do it. But there's a lot of abuse in the system. There's a lot of abuse in the system, and there's a lot of what I call preferential treatment in the system. It's got to do with, you know, if you're a female, which is a minority, if you're a minority, all that stuff, those people tend to get it. And I'm not crazy about that because the way I look at it, it's equal justice under the law. We need to start looking at that and applying equal justice under the law. And once we actually do that, we're going to be better off. We're totally going to be better off because we're going to have a system that is equal across the board. And then we need to sit there and look at where the abuses are happening. In regards to campaign finance reform, we need to totally reform it. We need to get firm limits in. We need a constitutional convention. We need to make sure that these guys are making a career and getting who in the hell in the private sector, unless you owned a company, gets $8,700 a month for pension because of a disability. And it, like I said, it's not just Jesse Jackson Sr., everybody in Congress, everybody right. in the Senate, all of them, they all are entitled to that, which is wrong. They're all entitled to free lifetime health care. They're all entitled to a pension. You serve 2 years at a job. You decide to retire. You get to collect your pay for the rest of your life, which,
right,
correct
that,
if I'm wrong, is $175,000 a year.
Right, with that, and I hate to cut you off there, Robert, but we do, you know, there's only a couple minutes left, and I want to give a couple minutes to James and to Cindy, and that, but I do appreciate you coming
in. Oh, no,
I'm
done. We're good.
You're welcome as well. And, and so, James, I'd like to bring it over to you, and then Cindy, if you can give us a minute, and then I'll have to close things out. Go ahead, James.
Well, I just, I just like everybody that is listening now and listens to the podcast later to look around you and see what's happening around you and what has been happening around you. And if you don't like it, do something. It doesn't matter what you do, but do something. Stop being complacent. Stop being a part of the problem by consenting, because you're doing nothing. And silence is consent. If you want to stop what's going wrong with America, you must step out of your comfort zone and do something. Action creates movement, and movement creates change. And if everybody in America were to do that, we would see real change in this country for the better. Now, people have got to stop sitting around and being complacent and become a part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
Well, thank you very much, James. And, of course, I really appreciate you coming on to the show, being one of our panelists, and definitely, folks, check out the overpasses for Obama's impeachment. They're on Facebook, and they're also broken up into different states for everyone. So check that out as well. And so, Cindy, we'll leave it up to you. Are you back with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, if you could just give us a closing minute or so, or 2 minutes, and then I will proceed to close out the last couple minutes of the show.
Well, I'm with James. If you don't like the way things are going, stop, just bellyaching about it and go out and do something. And if you have two pennies to rub together, spend it some way helping your country to survive, because you're about to lose your country. And I've been to a communist nation, and I can tell you it is not paradise. It is not what they are trying to sell you that it is. It is hell on earth to live in a communist nation. And the people walk around with no expression in their eyes. They have nothing to look forward to, nothing to live for. They just exist. And if you don't want to be like that, you need to get out and do something. Get up off your rear end, get up out from in front of your computer, and go do something. And James, thank you for what you do. I fully support you, and I spend my last two little dimes buying poster board and markers, and I make signs that say impeach Obama.
It's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Well, no problem.
Definitely.
Here.
I appreciate y'all coming on to the show. I do see I've only got about maybe 3 minutes left here. So I'd like to, of course, thank everyone who's listened to the show tonight, and please share the link with other folks so they can get this great conversation together, and hopefully bring them on as well to the show, and also to check out the different sites, things of that nature. And so I will end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So take care, everyone. Have a good night. And we will see you next week on the show. Good night.
Thanks, Robert.
All right. Good night, y'all.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Mary Ellen.